Good afternoon, everyone. All right, once more. Good afternoon, everybody. All right, just want to make sure everyone's awake after lunch. I have made 3 trips to the Brazilian coffee bar, so I am on my toes, fully awake. I think thanks to the World Science Forum for organizing that. That was absolutely brilliant, and I look forward to participating 2 years from now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Look forward to being on this panel. This is a huge subject. The World Bank is quite active in the area of science, technology, innovation, capacity building, entrepreneurship, and I will try to do this all in 10 minutes. If not, please go ahead and you can give me the cane. The World Bank vision, everyone can just take a quick look at this. One interesting piece of history is that the World Bank was formed after the Second World War in order to rebuild Europe. And it wasn't for about 25 years after the formation of the World Bank that the word poverty actually came into its vocabulary. And that was done actually by Bob McNamara, who became president of the World Bank at the tail end of the Vietnam War. Now, of course, the World Bank's mission is exclusively focused on poverty alleviation, and it's quite obvious from this statement where science and technology plays an important role. So these are the sectors that the World Bank works in. Again, quite obvious, you've seen this list in several other presentations. There's obviously a place not just for the fundamental science to steer this, but for scientists to actually play a role in formulating projects for the bank to do. So my contention is that international development is science. I'm sure that there are other areas here which could fall into the two blue circles, but for me, the World Bank is a fantastic experiment that demonstrates how important it is that there is an intersection between the social, natural, physical sciences and life sciences. It's all happening at the bank together. So this all, of course, leads to why innovation. I'll get to the point of why it is that the bank is involved in this space and how innovation actually plays a role. But you have to look at the facts. Developing countries, of course, they all strive to accelerate growth and generate more productive jobs, 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 jobs. Half of long-term growth is driven by technology changes or efficiency factors of production, and innovation is the driver of such changes. And then I highlighted the last bullet, which I think is critical, and it's been said, but I need to further explain the fact that the equation of increased R&D leading to commercial opportunities, economic growth, does not compute. There needs to be a whole host of other components in order to actually turn research and development into something that is actually useful for a country, actually solve its own problems, and actually that a country can actually use to better itself. And I'll get into more details there. So I should talk a little bit about the fact that the bank was involved in hosting a few global fora, one in 2007, one in 2009, with the primary mission of admitting that the World Bank does not know how to do this alone. Okay, so we recognized in the 2009 forum that the key is partnerships, that we need to link up with the scientific community at large, with other organizations in order to figure out how to make our development projects the most effective and have the greatest impact in countries. And as a result, what we've produced is something called a Global Forum Action Plan, which could be described as a menu of initiatives that the World Bank can actually look at actually implementing in countries. So instead of coming off with a report that says, okay, this is what we talked about, this is what we think is important, here's all of the data to support it, we bypassed all of that and went right for, okay, if you are a developing country, here's the World Bank, here are your partners, these are the kinds of things which we think will have the greatest impact, and it's not just the bank saying it, it's the wider scientific community, and many of you in the room here took part in this global forum. So the easiest way that we were able to divide up the kinds of interventions that the bank can support are inclusive innovation, I'll talk about that in a minute, entrepreneurship, building up a knowledge workforce, and of course the financing instruments. And this is the most important slide, I guess, of the presentation, which is the demand for innovation projects, innovation entrepreneurship projects. And I'm not even talking about agriculture, which you've heard about CGIAR and other agriculture programs that go on to the bank where there are dozens of projects. The demand from countries to have the World Bank help them in developing their own innovation portfolio is massive. In fact, I would say that the current capacity of the World Bank to keep up with this demand is unsustainable, which is why we're growing in this area. This is just a cross-section of the kinds of projects and the countries that we're working in. Before I came here, I did an inventory of about 40 projects that are happening around the world in about 35 countries. Some have more than one, where it's exclusively an innovation project, not just a subset of a larger project. So the demand for countries to figure out how to do this is massive. Don't look at the words on this slide, because we will not have time to cover it. The reason that I put this slide up is to show you the complexity of what an innovation ecosystem actually entails. And from a World Bank perspective, in the past, what we've done is a country comes to us and says, okay, we need a new intellectual property system. We need to learn how to do technology transfer. We need to revamp our research and development. Or we need to make our higher education curriculum more relevant. Doesn't work. Doing a single aspect of this, one single aspect of the innovation ecosystem is going to get you no further. So what we look to do and strive to do in our pipeline of projects is actually implement a holistic approach, which is find a place where you can manageably do a project and do it all. Okay, so I'll get into that a little bit. Again, don't look at the words. This is actually what's happening in the bank, which is, as you can see, very closely aligned with what we actually came up with at the Global Forum. Policy for innovation systems, countries need to have that foundation. Some countries have no science or innovation policy. We help them to develop it. On middle-income countries and other lower-income countries who actually have some kind of science and innovation policy, we help them to craft that, to globalize it, to make it more relevant. Technology and transfer and diffusion. If anybody knows a perfect model for technology transfer and diffusion, I would love to hear it. Frankly, I've never seen it. I think that every country, this kind of activity needs to be customized, and it's extremely important. And I think that's where it's very important for universities to think about the private sector component of what they do. Financing for innovation and entrepreneurship, looking at novel ways and partnerships in order to finance entrepreneurs and research and development. And then, of course, inclusive innovation, which makes a whole lot of sense for the World Bank, given that it does two things. One, it focuses research and development on areas that have some kind of social implication. And two, it actually gives researchers something to think about that can actually help their country. This is just a few pictures of some examples of inclusive innovations, ultra low cost, ultra high performance. That whole concept comes from a friend of mine, Ram Mashelkar, who many of you know from India. A $20 leg replacement, which counterpart is cost about $20,000 in the US, equal performance. A $100 incubator to create a silkworm industry in Rwanda, cook stoves that lower CO2 emissions by 80%. These stuff are all done in collaboration. The other thing that we do to help support entrepreneurs and scientists around the world is actually support a global network of incubators. This is a map that shows where those all are. Since 2001, we've actually been successful in supporting 300-plus incubators, creating over 21,000 SMEs, directly or indirectly creating over 230,000 jobs. And the survival rate, as you can see, for SMEs is actually quite large as compared to your typical incubator success. Just a quick note on the kinds of things that we support in order to build up a knowledge workforce. There are tons of data and interviews that we've done with employers around the world that have identified the skills gaps that exist from the people that universities are churning out and the kinds of jobs that they need, the high technology jobs. So the bank actually intervenes in those areas to make sure that curricula is relevant, but also that employers are there and are involved in the designing of that curricula at universities. Absolutely critical, in addition to on-the-job training. I just have three quick slides on global change and future development. For me, this is an obvious area where the scientific community needs to play a role. As you can see from this slide that goes out past 2030, the cost of mitigation and or mitigation and adaptation is going to rise significantly. And the community that knows the most about attacking these kinds of problems is the scientific community. I see where the bank and the scientific community needs to be aligned in order to address climate change. The numbers are astronomical. This is another example of agricultural yields. You can see all of the red, which seems to be a majority of the world, can expect agricultural change over the next 40 years. We need to know how to operate in those kinds of environments and have that as part of all of our development projects. And of course, the same applies to infectious disease. As the climate change, we can expect global health issues to change and also change away from emerging an infectious disease, but also from other types of disease. This is a very general statement, and for some it's quite obvious, but the old model of aid, the old model of prescription of the World Bank or other development agencies saying this is what you need to do, those days are gone. Everything we do is demand-driven. Everything we do is in partnership with countries, and I've been lucky enough to go on a few missions to countries where I've actually helped to develop science and innovation projects, and you have to get on the ground, you have to meet the people who are going to make this happen and implement it, and frankly, the bank at that point should take a back seat to the implementation of these projects. This is what I think the future of innovation is. It's no longer real estate for entrepreneurs or just plain R&D budgets. Scientists and entrepreneurs and engineers need access to networks. The things that many of us in our developed countries take for granted, our ability to access other scientists, information, and other types of networks comes very easily. In many countries, especially in sub-Saharan Africa and in parts of Asia, those networks do not exist. So the bank supports a lot of projects on just building up the networks and the kinds of mentors that these people can actually have access to. A seamless interaction between research and private sector, mentioned that before, incubation, and of course, outside investment. So this will be my last slide. Does anybody want to take a guess where the world's fastest growing economies are? I'm sure someone has. Speak up so I can hear. Sorry. China? India? South America? No, anyone else? I'm not saying you're all wrong, but you're all wrong so far. Right on. Okay, this is as a world banker, I have to provide a certain amount of data. So here's this graph that I stole from The Economist magazine. To me, it speaks volumes. As you can see, the thick blue line is the growth of African economies from the last 10 years. From 2001 to 2010, 6 of the top 10 growth economies are in sub-Saharan Africa. The projected growth for African countries from 2011 to 2015 goes up to 7. Okay, so this is where the action is. Okay, there's going to be plenty of action. Entrepreneurs in developed countries or developing countries need to think about access to these kinds of markets. It's not just an altruistic motive. It's a motive of profit as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Mandel.